right. Well, yeah, hello, everyone. Just a reminder, as they mentioned, we are in Holy Week this week, and this is a time where we reflect on what happened in Jesus' life 2,000 years ago, the week where he took the road to the cross. And so if you look up here on the screen, you see the different days of the week. So this is an incredible week in the church calendar and the lives of believers. But what I want to do is focus on the events of the weekend for a second. You'll notice Friday, that's Good Friday. That's the day where, you know, we believe that Jesus died, and you guys have Good Friday off of school. That's a holiday, no class, no chapel. That's a time to reflect on the death of Jesus. And then Sunday is Easter Sunday, and followers of Jesus all over the world will gather to celebrate this day. This is like the Super Bowl in the Christian life. This is an incredible holiday for us as believers. It's when we celebrate the best day in history, when Jesus rose from the dead. He conquered sin and death. That's incredible. And so Easter Sunday is when we celebrate that. So we have Jesus died on a Friday. He rose from the dead on a Sunday. But I want to talk about the Saturday for a second. Traditionally, we don't normally talk about Saturday. Now, this in church history has been called Low Saturday, Low Saturday. And it's called Low Saturday because of how horrible of a day this would have been for those closest to Jesus. Now, Jesus hasn't risen from the dead yet, so he still would have been dead on Saturday. And so those closest to Jesus would have been absolutely grief-stricken. Right? Imagine for a second, you're one of Jesus' followers, one of his disciples, one of his friends, one of his family members, and the person you have spent the last 3 years of your life with, he was your everything, your teacher, your master, your rabbi, your best friend, he has just died. So you feel like it's all over, right? And so those closest to Jesus would have been just horrified on Saturday, grieving, maybe even a bit scared. They may have thought that they were next, they were going to get killed next. Some of them were hiding. So Saturday would have been a low Saturday indeed. But man, what a difference a few hours can make, right? Because Jesus rose on Sunday. Now I have a question. Let's just say you're Jesus. You're not, but let's just say you're Jesus, okay? Let's just say you're Jesus. And let's just say everyone thinks you're dead, but you just rose from the dead. Who are you going to go reveal yourself to first? Who are you going to show first that you are alive? Remember, we don't have any group chats. We don't have any posting that you're alive, right? There's no quick, fast way to get the news out. You have to literally go to someone. So let's just say you're Jesus. Who do you reveal yourself to first? Are you going to go to your disciple John? Jesus and John were really tight. Is that who you're going to reveal yourself to first? That might be a good idea to show yourself to your best friend. Or are you going to go to Peter? Remember Peter? He was full of guilt, right? He had just denied Jesus. Maybe Jesus wants to go to him first and forgive him and show him that he's alive. Or maybe you want to go to your mother. That might be a good idea, right? For Jesus to first reveal himself to his own mother who thinks he's dead. Or maybe if you're Jesus, you're going to go to all of the disciples at once. That feels like it's most efficient for Jesus to kind of just share the news with all of them in one room and one showing. Jesus doesn't choose any of these people. He chooses someone else. He chooses a woman. Okay, Jesus, who's this woman? He chooses a woman named Mary Magdalene. Mary Magdalene. Why on earth would Jesus choose this woman? Why would Jesus choose Mary Magdalene? I'll tell you why. The relationship they had was unbelievable. Jesus had an incredible friendship with Mary Magdalene. They had an absolutely incredible bond. Now, here's the thing. I grew up in church hearing about all kinds of different heroes of the faith. Peter, Paul, James, John, Moses, King David, even Queen Esther, even Mary, Jesus' mom. But I never grew up hearing about Mary Magdalene very much. But as I have begun to study her life and learn more about her, she has become a hero of the faith to me. Easily one of my favorite characters in the Bible. We read that she is mentioned almost 12 times in the Gospels. That's almost more than any other disciple is mentioned. And we have reason to believe that Jesus probably spent more time with her than any other woman in his adult ministry life. They had an incredible friendship, okay? Now, historians have struggled to leave room for Jesus to have such an intimate bond with a woman in a patriarchal society in that day. There's a book that came out in 2003. It was called The Da Vinci Code, and it was a bestseller. And in that book, the author tried to argue that Jesus and Mary Magdalene had a sexual relationship, that they were married, which is a total sham and completely not true. But you can see how people are trying to make sense of this countercultural relationship that Jesus would have had with another woman in that time. Men and women were just not friends like that. And so this is what I want to do. I want to share Mary Magdalene's story this morning. I want to share her story. I want to tell you about the dark past she had, how she came out of that, what happens when she encounters Jesus, and how he changes her life forever. And so I'm going to tell her story. The first time we read about Mary Magdalene is in Luke chapter 8. And what we read is that when Jesus first encounters Mary Magdalene, she has 7 demons inside her body. Not one. 7 demons. Okay, now scholars believe, you know, the number 7 in the Bible is the number of completion. So scholars believe that 7 demons in her body meant that she was completely dominated by them. If you're anything like me, you might find it strange that she had 7 demons in her body. What did that look like? What was the nature of this demonic oppression? I don't completely know. I don't know how they got there. I don't know anything about her childhood or if it had something to do with something that happened to her, or maybe it was a sinful lifestyle that she engaged in and then they entered in. I don't really know, but what I do know is when Jesus found her, it was in a time when her body and her soul and her mind and her heart was completely impoverished by demonic activity. Such unprecedented darkness that she would have been under. Many believe that the psychological and emotional trauma on her body would have been severe. Now, I want you to think about it, all the different types of oppression she would have been under. So she would have been under demonic oppression completely, right? But because she was under demonic oppression, she would have been also oppressed by her society. Her society probably would have seen her as a crazy person, and she probably would have acted, because she was overrun by demons, she probably would have acted in ways that were very socially disruptive publicly. So society would have oppressed her as well, not to mention the type of oppression she would have already been under as a woman in that day. How oppressed can you get? How oppressed can you get? All 3 of these types of oppression, all working together, making her life completely miserable. And this is where Jesus finds her. And we read that Jesus sets her free from all 7 of her demons. Just sets her free. Okay, we have a painting of this. This is actually a recent painting. Some of you have enjoyed the TV show The Chosen. I highly recommend it. I think it's awesome. This is a painting depicting one of the moments in that TV show when Jesus does an exorcism and casts 7 demons out of her. This was painted in 2019 by a woman named Liz Swindle, and this painting is called You Are Mine, okay? Now, here's what happens. Pretty much after Jesus casts 7 demons out of Mary Magdalene, from that point on, she is completely attached to Jesus. She does not leave his side. Okay, and basically what we see out of Mary Magdalene is a woman who is just simply living out of her gratitude of what Jesus has done in her life. She does not leave his side. So Luke chapter 8 tells us that Mary Magdalene pretty much is traveling with Jesus and the other 12 disciples. So pretty much there was a group of women that would travel with Jesus and them, 3 to be specific. So Mary was right there with the 12 disciples, witnessing all of the things that Jesus did. So Mary was listening to Jesus' teachings. Mary was doing ministry with Jesus. She saw his healings. She saw all the miracles he did. So Mary was right there with the 12, witnessing all the things that Jesus did. Again, she couldn't leave his side. Also, Luke chapter 8 tells us that Mary Magdalene would give out of her own pocket to support Jesus' ministry. So Mary would not just be by Jesus' side, but now she is buying into his ministry. Now she is paying for his travels, paying for meals, paying for the 12 disciples as they are traveling, okay? Another verse at the end of the book of John tells us that Mary would actually help meet whatever needs that Jesus and the disciples had. So Mary is traveling with Jesus. Mary is witnessing all the things that Jesus said and did. Mary is getting a front row seat with the other 12 disciples, all right? Now, I'm trying to imagine for a second Mary taking it all in, trying to digest Jesus' teachings and learn at his feet. Now remember, Mary as a woman wouldn't have had all the same formal education that the men had, so I'm sure it would have been a little bit of a learning curve. I also have no idea what kind of lasting effect that some of the demonic activity had on her previous in her life. And so I don't know where Mary was at intellectually or psychologically or emotionally, but here's the thing, you guys. I think Mary was just eager. Right? I'm trying to imagine her learning at Jesus' feet. I don't think she would have understood everything that Jesus taught or did, but for Mary, she didn't have to understand everything in order to follow Jesus. She didn't have to understand everything in order to follow and obey Jesus. I think Mary's faith was just simple and straightforward and childlike. For her, it was like, Jesus saw me at my worst and set me free. Now, I will do anything he asks of me. I will go anywhere he goes. What else is there to talk about? I think her faith was just simple and straightforward. What was her identity? She was Jesus' friend. What was her calling? Just don't leave Jesus' side. Just stay close to Jesus, right? Here's where things get interesting, okay? Pretty much, it's about 3 years of this. Mary following Jesus around, witnessing everything that he's doing, seeing it all, okay? So it's about 3 years of this, and then we get to this week, Holy Week, okay? And pretty much what happens is Jesus has a meal with his 12 disciples, and then he goes to the garden. When he's in the garden, a huge army comes and arrests Jesus, okay? They arrest him and take him away. Now, all 12 of Jesus' disciples desert him. All of them run away, so they all are scared. They all flee. I have a question, though. Who do you think is there at the foot of the cross during Jesus' final hours? Mary Magdalene. We have a painting of this. It's probably one of my favorite paintings in all of history. Mary there at the foot of the cross when all the other disciples ran away. Now, it's worth mentioning the Apostle John, he ran away and then came back. And then a few other women were there at the foot of the cross with Mary and there with Jesus. Incredible. There's another verse that says a group of women actually followed Jesus during his pre-crucifixion. So as he's on the road to the cross, a group of women actually followed Jesus behind him as he's walking the cross up the hill. Why so many women? Why are there women everywhere Jesus goes? Jesus treated women incredible. Jesus treated women incredible. So Mary, there with Jesus before he dies, there with Jesus as he dies. Now, what happens next? Pretty much what we see is Jesus' body is taken off the cross, all right? And traditionally, criminals, they would leave a criminal's body on the cross just up there to rot. And also as a warning for people who passed by, just a warning to not defy the government. So traditionally, a body would be left on the cross. But what we see is there's a man named Joseph of Arimathea who pays for Jesus' body to be properly buried and put in a tomb. So what happens is Jesus' body is taken off of the cross and, yeah, like I said, properly buried and put in a tomb. I have a question. Who do you think is there watching as Jesus' body is being buried and put in the tomb? Mary Magdalene. And there's just something to this for me. You guys, for her, she's like, I don't care if he's dead. I still have to be near him. I don't care if he's dead. I just still have to be near Jesus. Man, she was so attached to him. So with him before he dies, with him as he dies, with him after he dies. So Jesus is put in a tomb on Friday night. And a large stone is rolled over the tomb. And then I have another question. We see someone waking up early, early, while it's still dark, on Sunday morning, going to visit the tomb. Who do we think it is? Mary Magdalene. And at this point, unless it was Jesus, this would be kind of creepy, right? That someone is so attached, right? Mary Magdalene wakes up while it's still dark, and we see her walking to the tomb. Here's what happens. So Mary is going to visit the tomb, right? And she walks up and she notices that the stone is rolled away. And she looks inside the tomb and she notices that Jesus is not there, which makes her super angry, and she starts to cry. So she's crying because she's just so mortified that someone would steal Jesus' body. Where is he? Who on earth would do something so disrespectful? So she's crying because she's angry, but I can't help but think there is so much behind her tears, right? So the passage tells us in four different places how much she is sobbing, deeply sobbing, weeping, crying, okay? Man, I'm trying to think what's behind these emotions. So she's obviously angry, for one, just so angry that someone would take Jesus' body. Number two, though, right, she is still cut to the heart, right? Because her best friend is now dead. And he wasn't just her best friend, but he was her savior. And he didn't just save her life. He gave her a new life, right? Jesus gave her a new life to live. So he gave her companionship. He gave her purpose. He gave her protection. He gave her value and worth. He was her covering. And so she's obviously super sad that Jesus is dead. This was the person that she was so attached to, right? But she's not just angry. She's not just sad. But I can't help but think that she is super scared, right? Jesus was her protector. He was her defender, right? And I can't help but think that maybe she's super scared because what if the society throws me away again? What if demons come back? What if the male disciples don't accept me anymore? Who am I now that my protector and my defender is gone? Now I'm just a vulnerable woman with a past, right? So she is absolutely weeping, absolutely crying. And she just wants to be with Jesus, and he's gone. And he's not just gone. His body is gone, right? So she can't even be with who she most wants to be with, whether he's dead or alive. So she is absolutely grief-stricken. She is absolutely beside herself. Now, what happens is in that moment, a man comes up to her. Okay, and readers know that it's Jesus, right? Because he has risen from the dead. But for some reason, she doesn't recognize him. And I'm like, how do you not know? Like, how do you not know it's Jesus? But a few reasons, maybe he looked different after he had risen. But many believe that because she was crying so hard that her eyes were blurry and she didn't recognize it's him, which still, I'm just like, how do you not know? This is what happens. This man asks her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who are you looking for?" And she thinks he's the gardener. She thinks he's the gardener. And she tells him, "I'm looking for my Lord. Can you tell me where he is? Where is he? Tell me where he is, and I will go get him and bring him back." Which I'm imagining, like, this, what is she, 120 pounds, picking up this dead body and bringing him back. But for her, none of it is rational, right? She just needs to be with Jesus. She just needs to be with Jesus, right? So Jesus asks her, "Woman, why are you crying?" It'll be up here on the screen. "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it that you are looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you've put him and I will get him." Jesus then said to her, "Mary." And right then, the man that she thought was dead, she realizes he is alive, standing right in front of her. And in one word, Jesus finds a way to reveal his identity. And at the same time, somehow, he reminds Mary of her identity as well, right? Man, she knew the sound of his voice. I can't help but think her living under demonic voices for years and years, tormenting her and lying to her, haunting her, the most disturbing voices. The moment she met Jesus, his voice was going to be different, right? So her confusion lifted, right? Her eyesight cleared. The person she wants so badly, the person she was most attached to, now standing right in front of her, and she becomes the first person that Jesus reveals that he has risen, the first person he goes to. For me, it's the way. Are you telling me the first person Jesus chooses to reveal himself to is a formerly demon-possessed woman? Why? Why did Jesus choose her? Because she would not stop until she found what she was looking for. She did not stop seeking Jesus till she found what she was looking for, until she was satisfied. Mary was the only disciple who was present for five huge moments in Jesus' life: his ministry, the road to the cross, his burial, and the empty tomb. Man, she was so devoted and so faithful to Jesus. We have a quote up here, British theologian, his name's Adam Clark. He said this. He said, "Let it be remarked that Mary Magdalene sought Jesus more fervently and continued more affectionately attached to him than any of the rest. Therefore, to her first, Jesus is pleased to show himself, and she is made the first herald of the gospel of a risen Savior." So Jesus pretty much tells her to go deliver the news to the brothers that she saw the risen Lord, that she's actually alive. So she gets to be the first bearer of the news. Okay. What about us? What do we do with this story? What do we do with this story? So first thing is this: Easter Sunday is coming up, right? This Sunday. And two things. Some of us maybe are unaware. Why is the resurrection such a big deal? What does this mean for me, right? Two things. First off, of course, the resurrection's incredible because we realize we serve a God who cannot stay dead, right? And that is super good news for all of us, that we serve and live for a God who's alive and active and real, okay? We serve a God who finds death pathetic, right? We serve a God who cannot be conquered by anything. And that's incredible, right? That God can't die. He can't stay dead. Incredible. Also, it's incredible because as Trey and Nick mentioned in their verses, the resurrection is our story as well. When we choose to give our lives to Jesus, what happens is we leave an old way of life and we get to step into a new way of life. Old way of life gone, old way of life conquered, done for, it is finished, right, is what Jesus said. And we get to step into a new way of life. So the resurrection is not just Jesus' story, but now it's our story. We get new life, okay? But the story of Mary teaches us something even more incredible, all right? It teaches us that the resurrection is not just good news for all of us collectively, but it is deeply personal, meeting us one-on-one, right? What we see in the story with Mary is that we are given a story, a demonstration of just what kind of intimate, personal relationship Jesus wants to have with us on the other side of rising from the dead. That's what we get. So the resurrection, it's good news for all of us, but it is deeply personal. And so as we reflect on this week, I just want you to imagine Jesus on the road of the cross for you. Jesus dying and suffering for you, taking on your sins, dying for you. And then I want you to imagine Jesus walking out of the grave looking for you, calling you by name, trying to find you. So the resurrection is incredible for all of us, right? Because we serve a God who's not dead, he's alive, but it's also deeply personal, meeting you on the other side of your tears and your blurriness and your confusion, right? I'm going to ask our worship team to come on up. So in light of all of this, what is our response? What do we do with this story, right? Well, Mary, she teaches us something. She teaches us that there is one thing that you alone can give Jesus, that no one else can give Jesus. There is one thing that you actually get to give Jesus that no one else can give him, and that is your personal devotion. That is your personal attachment. No one else can give Jesus the loyalty and the love and the devotion that only you can give him. You are the one person in the world that can offer Jesus your personal love. And there's just something to that for me. There's something to that, that no one else can give the love that I have for Jesus, right? No one else can give Jesus that kind of devotion. You guys, I want to be like Mary. I want to be like Mary, so attached to Jesus, not giving up till she found what she was looking for. I want to be like Mary. You all are heading into summer, right? You guys are approaching the end of this year. It's been an incredible year. So many awesome moments of this year. Some of you are graduating, right? Some of you are transferring. That's fine if you want to transfer. All right. Some of you are transferring. Some of you are going into summer and aren't sure of your plans. Some of you maybe are scared to go home. I don't know. Some of you maybe are full of confusion and you're not sure what to do with life right now. Can I just encourage you, keep seeking after Jesus and don't stop till you find what you're looking for. Man, Mary shows us, we've been talking about identity and calling. Mary shows us that maybe it's more simple than we think. What's our identity? We're Jesus' friend. What's our calling? Just don't leave Jesus' side. Jesus is not asking for your perfection or your performance or your perfect living. He's just asking for you to stay devoted to him. Stay by his side. Maybe our calling is a lot more simple than I thought. Maybe we're just called to stay by Jesus' side. I want to be like Mary.